Hello and welcome to The Exit presented by Flippa. This is a 30-minute podcast featuring amazing entrepreneurs who have been there and they have done it. The Exit talks to operators who have bought and sold businesses of all different types. You'll learn how they did it, why they did it, and get exposure to the world of exits, a world occupied by a small few, but accessible to many. And on this special episode, I sit down with Paulo Gomez, a successful serial entrepreneur who has sold multiple businesses in the health space. And we talk about everything around his multiple exits. One very recent one from Cure Health, and he does a great job of walking through how to build a successful bootstrapped business and exiting it. And he goes into detail on setting a business up for success from the get-go. And you're definitely going to want to stick around till the end because he does a great job describing all the different details that go into building a great bootstrapped business. So without further ado, let's dive right into this interview here with Paulo. All right, guys, I am here with Paulo Gomez, the entrepreneur who has sold two incredible bootstrap companies to public companies. How's it going today, Paulo?
Doing fantastic, Steve. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Just starting up the week. Super excited to get into this, learn a little bit about your background in doctor care. So before we kind of get into the weeds a little bit with everything, let's hear your background. What brought you into starting businesses and eventually into doctor care?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I think I'll start just, you know, as a kid sort of growing up in high school and even in the early parts of college, always felt like I was a bit different, certainly learned differently. And, you know, that led to an ADHD diagnosis. Really had a tough time with structure in the education system. I think that's pretty consistent with a lot of entrepreneurs. But, you know, did enough to get by to the next level. And after business school, everyone was getting jobs in traditional industries like consulting and banking. You know, got my career started off and with a couple of roles in industry, and I really learned pretty quickly that I was a really terrible employee, really terrible. And so I knew pretty much right away that entrepreneurship was my calling. It certainly ran in my family, but I didn't have a path. So I kind of discovered healthcare sales, which for me was a solid stepping stone. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs start their careers in sales really for the same reason. I mean, it allows you to be your own boss to some extent. Mm-hmm. You know, it gives you quick feedback on sort of progression and wins, and it's exciting. And so, you know, I was working in healthcare sales, sort of started in pharmaceuticals and then moved to the EMR industry, which is really software for doctors. And really what was consistent with both of my sales experiences is that I kept meeting with doctors who, you know, had this, we demand so much of them in medical school, and they came out, you know, after years of sort of honing their craft, they came out and started a practice. Really, there was this whole business side. They were all small business owners, but they never really set themselves up well for success on that side. So I really, from my experiences, there was a consistent theme with doctors, which was that I saw so much opportunity to help them with the business side of their practice. And really, Doctor Care was started shortly after as a consulting company, really to give myself a job, but also with, you know, that strategic focus in mind, which is I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew I was going to help doctors on the business side of their practice because I had seen so much opportunity there. And really over the years, at Doctor Care, we shifted from consulting services to a services-based organization, and then ultimately a tech-based organization. And I think that progression is something that, you know, a lot of companies have seen over the years. I'm really proud of the fact that Doctor Care was bootstrapped, and really we focused on profitability since day one. And we were ultimately acquired by a company called Well Health Technologies, and I'm currently working for Well Health right now in a business lead capacity. I run an entire division for them, and I'm focused on M&A in the sector.
I love that you touched on the ADHD concept just briefly, just because that is to me something that, you know, a lot of the high net worths that I know. Now, a lot of the most successful entrepreneurs that I know are, you know, had that diagnosis as well. And they operate multiple 7-8-figure businesses now. And I think that there's just something about that I think is really, really fascinating, where, you know, people can operate at a high level now as adults after getting that kind of crushing blow when they're younger, you know, because it makes you feel really kind of inadequate at a young age. And I think finding your own way is important. So I'm glad that you found, you know, you really owned it. You said, I really like sales, I like solving problems. You found one. And in the job that you were working with doctors and getting that interface time is really great. A lot of people don't really get that experience, like to be able to say, like, there's a problem. I want to solve that problem as fast as I can, like as best as I can. And that's really fortunate that you got to get into that. You know, I think that that's something that a lot of people don't really get to experience. So you start Dr. Care, and what was that like? You bootstrapped it. So did you have a co-founder? Did you guys put in, like, you know, a couple $1,000s? Cause you said it was bootstrapped, which is always to me such an accomplishment. What was it like getting started for you?
Yeah. A lot of all of that, I'd say, you know, over the first few years, you know, because there wasn't this monstrous pool of capital to make investments, I think we, you know, sort of operated without a clear focus, really chased a lot of opportunities around. The business opportunity within medical practices is obviously pretty large. So we were, you know, chasing whatever opportunity was in front of us. And really, I wouldn't say that Dr. Care was really a sellable business back then. We really operated in too many niches, again, really focused on chasing the money in areas where we saw an opportunity to make a difference, but ultimately didn't really had lacked, you know, a clear strategic focus. In about year five, there was a big regulatory shift that happened that really made about 85% of our revenue disappear. We had about 100 employees or contractors that depended on Dr. Care at that time. And I took it really hard. And I remember really for the first time, you know, in my entire life being in a prolonged state of depression. And it was a pretty bad period. You know, it was definitely suffering from depression, but ultimately it was this weird feeling. I had it in my gut. I knew that, you know, if I got through this, I was going to look back on it and know that it was probably the best thing that could have happened to me. Because I was about to learn so much from the experience. And, you know, it sounds cliche, but I can remember that happening. I had a partner at the time. I'll speak a little bit about my partner later on, but you know, we sat around my living room and we said, okay, we're going to build around what's left of the business. And what was left of the business was really our billing services. And we made a clear intention that day to really focus the company around billing services and to really disrupt the medical billing space and to become the largest Canadian company in medical billing. And really over the last 3 years, we achieved that goal. We've become the largest billing company. We pretty much serve doctors really across Canada. And certainly over the last couple of years, it was timely because the broader healthcare industry really started to heat up. A number of public company aggregators entered the space. And we were approached by several over the past couple of years about selling to them.
So now we can kind of get into a little bit of the nitty gritty, the how. I think a lot of the listeners out there are very curious consistently on how you go through the process of selling a business. There's so many different ways, so many different stories, people bumping into each other at coffee shops, you know, with their eventual acquirer and things like that. What was that like for you guys, and how did it happen? Hey guys, Steve here, and taking a quick pause from the interview. I know that selling a business can feel unattainable and just out of reach for everybody, but it's definitely something that is very reachable for people that are listening to this podcast with Flippa. And I've mentioned that this show is presented by Flippa. They have over 3 million users on their platform who are looking to acquire everything from content sites to e-commerce stores to SaaS platforms or even mobile applications. So if you're curious and want to know more about what your business is worth, head to flippa.com/theexit for free valuations on your business. It takes a couple minutes to literally go through, and you can just go through the whole process without committing to anything at all. So once again, flippa.com/theexit, check it out, get evaluation on your business without any commitments, and just see exactly what your valuation of your business is worth. So let's dive into the interview.
you know, for us, it was pretty organic. As I said, I mean, timing is so important in these sorts of things, because I mean, for us, I feel like we really began to hit our stride at the same time that our broader industry was heating up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it really was the right timing, and we were really lucky, because a lot of the conversations started by these aggregators and, you know, the strategics in our space really finding us, which was great. We met with a couple of them. We didn't feel like it was the right time to sell, but we kept conversations going with Well Health right after we, you know, chatted with them the first time. We loved their story. Our culture seemed to fit, and that was consistent. You know, every time we met with them, we intentionally kept that conversation up, because we knew of all the potential buyers of our business, you know, Well Health seemed to be the best fit. So we were intentional about maintaining that relationship. They were super patient with us. And pretty much about a year after we started chatting, we finally agreed to entertain an LOI. But really, we were thinking, you know, once we got that LOI, we would definitely go to the broader market and see what else was out there. But, you know, by the time we got an LOI from them, we were really, really sold on the broader mission. We were sold on sort of that next chapter of our lives and what we would be doing for them, you know, the broader mission of not only continuing doctor care, but leading an entirely new business unit for them. You know, once the money was there, we ultimately decided that, you know, the right fit was just to pursue that opportunity. And so we didn't go to market. And, you know, I thought maybe we'd regret that, but, you know, we're 6 months in, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. And I definitely feel like we made the right decision still.
So before we get into how people can really, you know, prepare their business, if somebody's listening and they have a business that they're thinking yep. about exiting, before we get into that, at the current time, you know, when we're recording this, you had some exciting news recently. And as far as I understand it, you co-founded another company, right? That actually just recently had an exit.
Yeah, that's right. So about 2.5 years ago, I co-founded a company called Cure Health, which is also a healthcare company, completely different space than doctor care, though. It's actually a tech platform in the rare disease industry. And this was, you know, just a tremendous opportunity to work with a group of co-founders to create. We all had day jobs. We were all operators. We hired a team. We had a great idea. And really, you know, over the last 2.5 years, just have had tremendous success. And again, we're super fortunate enough to have a lot of excitement around the technology and the company. And so when we reached a point just recently where we were looking for capital to do our first fundraising, we went to strategics in the space, and ultimately a couple of strategics wanted to buy us instead. And so, you know, we feel super blessed to be able to sell. Really exciting opportunity.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So that's a great segue into how people can prepare themselves for an exit, their business and themselves. So, you know, you had the exit with Dr. Care, and now you have a second one in the healthcare space, Cure Health. What can people do to prepare their business for an exit?
Yeah. So Steve, I think really like the, you know, the textbook answers here really do apply. I mean, having, you know, a data room set up and really thinking about building a sellable business from day one, those things matter, because if you don't, we learned this at Dr. Care, it really does take some time to, you know, set your business up for sale after, you know, a few years of starting a business without thinking about it that way. There's, you know, agreements you got to get in place. There's, you know, even legal, if you don't take the legal components of that seriously, you know, there's a bunch of cleanup work to do. I think other things you can do though are, you know, finding out who the strategics in the space are, understanding who are potential buyers really early, like even in the early stages of when you founded a company or in the early stages of your company's progression, identifying those strategics and starting to align yourselves with them, starting to have conversations with them, trying to see what they're looking for in potential companies that they're interested in acquiring, and really trying to align yourself with that. I think Being a metrics-driven organization with really strong KPIs, like measuring things like new sales and attrition and NPS consistently is going to matter a lot. Seeing those trends, and of course, you know, you want those trends to be growing over time. I think that's something that we had at DoctorCare was really strong discipline around sales. Mm-hmm. And measuring things like NPS. And we showed, you know, when we were ready to have that conversation with, well, you know, it made our value so much easier to just show them how those had been trending over the years. And it just made, you know, the value prop so much easier. Being clear about where your growth is coming from. I mean, a potential acquirer is going to want a really easy story as to, you know, how's this growth going to continue? So really being super clear about where this growth is coming from, what's your strategic focus, and being realistic. I mean, I think a lot of buyers don't want these sort of hockey stick decks that or graphs that are unrealistic. I think a lot of sophisticated buyers are sort of tired of that. So yeah, there's a couple of things. I also think for us, you know, developing relationships. I mean, for us, we're in Canada, we're in healthcare. It's a pretty small industry. It tends to be pretty intimate. So it was easier for us to really get to know the relationships with potential acquirers. But that really went a long way for us to, you know, when you start a sale discussion, already have trust established, already have the relationship piece. You don't have to sort of manage that and build that. Really expedited the process for us when we got going.
Mm-hmm. Well said. KPIs, love that you have everything in place, starting from the start with everything that you want to have in order for it to go through. In terms of timing, I think this is often a tricky subject for a lot of people, where people will send me DMs and ask me like, hey, what's the right time to sell my business? And I mean, in short, there's, you know, never a right or a wrong time that people can go about it. But I think that's an unanswered question. So in your experience, you know, you guys were raising a round and went to strategics, and then ultimately they said, hey, we just want to buy you instead. That's exactly what happened with my company that I exited. I think that's a very common timing situation, because you're about to, you know, take on some responsibility from investors, or you could go, it's almost like a crossroads, you know, to choose the two directions. But in your opinion, what do you think, what would you say to those listeners about the time, if the time is right to sell?
Yeah, I was actually listening to a couple of the Flippa podcast with past entrepreneurs, and you know, I think a couple of them mentioned the same thing that I'm going to say, which is, you know, in your gut, you know, and certainly that was the feeling that I had at DoctorCare was, you know, like, yes, we could continue to, you know, grow the company and, you know, that was certainly exciting. But I think for us, it was, you know, we'd spent 8 years at DoctorCare already growing DoctorCare, you know, really ready for another chapter. And, you know, with that next chapter was being a part of a bigger company, doing things that we couldn't have potentially done at DoctorCare, like also doing M&A and really learning that skill, and really taking advantage of really deep pockets that our acquirer has, and also learning from them. I mean, the leadership team has done tremendous things. They sold their last business to PayPal for $300 million. They've ran public companies. So I think for both my partner and I, it was about, you know, the next chapter being all about growth and new experiences and learning. And, you know, maybe you're going to leave some money on the table, but for us, the intangibles were worth more than, you know, the potential money we were going to leave on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. I like that. It's really kind of the equity of learning something and learning a new skill set, learning about M&A and using resources in this new way to be able to really learn more. There's so much equity there that money can't really buy. And I like that went into your decision. So the finale question that we always like to ask across the board is, knowing what you know now, Paulo, what would you tell yourself 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's a good question. Mm-hmm. I think I'll start with chill out. and you know, I I think a lot of entrepreneurs wear or put too much pressure on themselves. I definitely struggled a lot over the years with anxiety and imposter syndrome and a lot of the typical issues that lots of entrepreneurs struggle with. But I know I wasn't the most fun person or the happiest person to be around, both in my professional life and personal life. So I think I would have, you know, told myself to invest in life habits a lot earlier in life. I eventually figured it out, but, you know, really, really establishing life habits around mental health and meditation and exercise and journaling and really investing in that support system, all the things that, you know, it took me many years to figure out, but I'm in a really good spot now. And it's stuff that I've definitely learned is a lifelong process, but I think I would have probably invested a little earlier. And I understood that, like, you know, life is, you have a long time in your career. And these aren't like live or die, like the problems that you're going to have on a Monday morning are not like live and die problems. Like, you're going to have business issues to deal with every Monday morning for the rest of your career, right? So I think another point that I probably mention is just that, is you know, you're never going to stop having business problems to figure out. And so I think I was kind of like, entrepreneurs kind of get on that, and business owners and leaders often get on that sort of, you know, that stairmaster of like business problems and just like hoping that they're just going to, if only I can just like, they'll just end. And I think one day you just wake up and you just realize it's never going to end. There's always going to be bigger problems to tackle. And as your career gets more, gets further ahead, and as your business gets bigger and more complex, those problems just become bigger and bigger and bigger. And just understanding that, you know, the problems that keep you up at night and the problems that you're most afraid to tackle are ultimately the most important ones to tackle that'll make all the difference. Yeah. I think one more, if I could, if we have time for it.
Certainly.
Okay. I think the last thing that I probably would tell myself is just the importance of people. And again, this one sounds cliche, but I think for most of my career, I was, you know, really set on solving problems. And, you know, if they were quick problems to solve, I'd hire the person without like totally doing the due diligence, or, you know, potentially, you know, be really quick to trust certain opportunities and maybe people that came with those opportunities and partners. I think what I've learned over time is the people decisions are the most costly. They take the most out of you. And really, you know, you waste years sometimes by hiring by either hiring the wrong people or partnering with the wrong people. And so these days, you know, we take our hiring really seriously. We do a ton of due diligence around potential new ventures and new opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, my partner, I lucked out. We're super complementary. His skill set is completely different than my skill set. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've been able to have so much success, is because, you know, together we're the perfect CEO, but independently we're both so flawed. But yeah, we lucked out there. So I think that's one that's really served us both and led to a lot of success. But yeah, just like really being intentional with people, really prioritizing the people decisions you make, because they are ultimately going to contribute to the most success, but also can be the biggest problems.
Awesome. Well, that's all the questions I have for you. Where can people go and learn more about, you know, what you're working on or your social media? Or where would you like people to find out more?
Sure. So I'm actually not on social media almost exclusively. The only thing I have is a LinkedIn profile. So yeah, if anyone's interested in chatting or think I can be of help to anybody, I'm always interested in conversations and meeting new people. So you can find me on my LinkedIn page. You can search my name, Paulo Gomes, in Toronto, and I'm sure you'll find me. Well Health is the company that I work for now.
Awesome. Well, wherever you guys are listening, on Spotify, iTunes, the link that Paulo just mentioned will be in the show notes. But once again, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story and everything about it.
Really appreciate you having me on, Steve. Thanks so much.